The parents of the Australian journalist imprisoned in Egypt, Peter Grester, have welcomed the news that Tony Abbott has personally intervened on their son's behalf. The ABC understands that the Prime Minister spoke directly to the interim Egyptian president, Adli Mansour, last night and asked for Mr. Grester to be released. Yuris and Lois Grester said a short time ago that they were hoping this would keep the momentum going towards Peter's freedom. It's coming up to day 90 in Cairo's Tora prison for Peter Grester and his two Al Jazeera TV colleagues. They're due to appear in court again on Monday after a hearing at the beginning of this week at which the prosecution had great difficulty producing evidence to back its charges. Meanwhile, the general who ousted Egypt's first freely elected leader, Abdel Fattah el-Sisi, has announced he's standing for election for president. Under Egypt's new constitution, that election's supposed to be held by April the 18th, but the election will be held amid a massive political and human rights crackdown. Peter Grester and his Al Jazeera colleagues are just some of the journalists imprisoned in this massive sweep. Mona El-Tahawi is an Egyptian writer visiting Sydney.
I don't know how many journalists are in jail, but I do know that according to most human rights figures, at least 16,000 people have been detained in Egypt, 16,000, since June 30th, when Mohamed Morsi was overthrown, or just before he was overthrown.
You say 16,000 people detained, that could just be people arrested for ordinary crimes. You're saying 16,000 political prisoners,
yes,
are you?
Yes, these are people specifically that were taken in during protests or that have to do with the Muslim Brotherhood or have been labeled opposition in any shape or form by the regime in Egypt. And the journalists specifically that you talk of, the Al Jazeera journalists, yes, they were charged with ridiculous things like supporting the Muslim Brotherhood and being a part of a foreign plot. And, you know, this all speaks to the paranoia and the very thin skin of the Egyptian regime. And it clearly shows that they're not brooking any kind of dissent, which again goes back to what I was saying about the media and how almost impossible it would be to have free and fair elections in Egypt under these conditions.
Peter Grester has said that the international pressure is one reason why he is not being treated even worse than he is in jail. But we've heard from his family descriptions of the very small cell that he's in, the great privations that he has in terms of food and books and newspapers and all the rest of it. How are ordinary political prisoners who don't have that international pressure behind them treated?
Well, you can imagine absolutely horrendously, because if even, you know, foreign citizens of foreign countries that Egypt would want to keep some kind of friendly relations with are treated that badly, you can imagine what it's like to be an anonymous, detainee. We, among those 16,000 political prisoners that have been rounded up since June 30th, are at least 300 minors. That's, you know, children, basically, who are also in being held in terrible conditions. We hear of terrible stories of torture. We hear of people being put in solitary confinement. And I think that this, again, speaks to the fact that the revolution that began in January of 2011, the main catalysts of that revolution was to end police brutality and to end the torture of the Egyptian regime has been using against Egyptians for decades. And clearly that torture continues, and clearly that police brutality has not ended.
This has been a week when more than 500 people were sentenced to death, and it emerged that some of those people sentenced to death were actually either dead or in exile or in prison, in custody, at the time when these alleged crimes were committed. Is that a normal part of the justice system now?
Well, see, that's the thing. I mean, what kind of justice system do we have in Egypt? The judiciary in Egypt is certainly not independent. Many of the judges that continue to pass judgment in Egypt today were appointed by the Mubarak regime, basically to be its cronies. And those judges know very well what's expected of them by the regime. And the fact that that judge, after just two sessions, felt that he could sentence 529 people to death just shows you the kind of the impunity with which they behave in Egypt. We don't have justice in Egypt. And I think along with the judiciary, the fact that the Minister of the Interior and the military remain as powerful as they are and feel that they can violate people's rights even after we began a revolution and act like this without being held accountable, those three institutions especially, the judiciary, the military and the Ministry of the Interior, are three of the biggest obstacles we have to democracy in Egypt and to freedom in Egypt.
Notwithstanding everything you've said about lack of a free press, press and judiciary and so forth. Isn't it fair to say that Sisi is actually popular by measurable standards?
Well, I mean, he's popular in the sense that, you know, if you stopped people on the street and asked him, do you like him? They will say, yes, we do, because of this idea that he somehow saved Egypt from, you know, the kind of the Islamist menace, if you like. And there are, and I'm happy that Mohamed Morsi is no longer our president, because many of us feel that he failed in many of the ways that we wanted him to be a transitional president. And one of the biggest failures is that he helped to make Sisi as popular as he is, in that he promoted him to defense minister, despite the fact that Abdel Fattah al-Sisi defended the so-called virginity tests against female revolutionaries, for example. These were sexual assaults that were used against women protesters in 2011.
In the Arab Spring.
Exactly. Despite the fact that this happened to women protesters, Mohamed Morsi promoted Abdel Fattah al-Sisi to defense minister. And during his year in power, Mohamed Morsi allied himself with the military rather than with the people. So I think one of the main reasons that Sisi is so popular is because he was promoted to this position, ironically enough, by Mohamed Morsi, who was then overthrown by Sisi. But at the end
You've got the army on one side and the Muslim Brotherhood on the other, and you say both have failed in their different ways. Isn't that an indictment on the democratic opposition, that it has been unable either to unite or to sell a genuine alternative to the people?
Well, I think for the longest time, for at least 60 years of our modern history, we've been stuck between making a false choice between the regime in the form of the military largely and the Islamists. And I think this is a false choice that we're finally kind of beginning to unravel ourselves from. But just as the Mubarak regime was always positioning itself as kind of the savior of the people from this bogeyman called the Islamists, it wasn't just cracking down on the Islamists, it was also cracking down on liberals and progressives. So we weren't really given a chance to organize. So our chance to organize really began 3 years ago. And again, 3 years is not a long time. But nonetheless, I will give that to you. We should be more organized now, and we shouldn't be fielding, as we did during our presidential elections in 2012, 11 candidates. If we'd fielded just two candidates as president and vice president, we might have won.
Egyptian writer Mona El-Tahawi, who's in Australia as a guest of the Sydney Opera House and the Wheeler Centre. There'll be a longer version of that interview available on our website shortly.